I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York.
Here's Darnold's throw to the goal line, and Griffin reaches back, and it's a touchdown. And here's Saquon Barkley, and he is off to the races. Saquon for six. That's down the line, and it's gone. Hicks, 4-1 Yankees in the first. And Alonzo drives one to deep center field. Back goes Brinson, takes a look, and it's out of here. Oh, Robinson with a steal. Gives the ball to the ball.
Levert, back in, fade, oh, he's a one-man wrecking crew!
Pass out to Panarin, he's got some room, goes in, he scores! Oh, a beauty by Artemi Panarin! Plays it across, shot by Yates, he scores! There's number 1 for number 1!
They score! Josh Bailey! Game 1!
And now, it's time for the Tri-State Sports Beat with your hosts, Nick Federico, Scott DeBell, and Joe Bruno.
What is going on, everyone? It is another week of the Tri-State Sports Beat. Nick and Scott here will be joined with Joe a little later. But some good and a lot of bad happening in New York sports right now. I mean, we have the Yankees in the playoffs. Exciting times with the NHL draft coming up with, unfortunately, the Rangers and the number 1 overall pick. But then the Devils having three first-round picks as well, and then, of course, the dumpster fire that is New York football. We will touch on it all in this week's episode, and then, of course, we'll get to fun with Phonics with Joe and our Tri-State Sportsbook picks. But, pal, how you doing today?
We're doing okay, I think. Coming off that win last night for the Yankees, I'm feeling pretty good, and then this weekend will come, and then I will be sad because both the Giants and Jets are just an absolute train wreck.
Yeah, and we could have Joe Flacco starting at quarterback.
We could. But we're going to change things up a little bit because let's talk about the Giants first, pal, because the thing that pissed me off about this game was that the Giants should have never been in this game, and they were until the final drive. This game was just a mess all over the place. The defense, we're going to start with the good, which is what we've been, we haven't been able to do these past couple weeks because it's just been all so bad. But, of course, the Giants losing 17-9 in L.A. against the Rams. But the reason the Giants were still in this game for the whole 60 minutes was because the defense was holding this high-powered Sean McVay offense to 17 points, 58 rushing yards, and 182 passing yards. That's hard to do against an innovative, an actual innovative offensive mind like Sean McVay. Not to mention, they got to Jared Goff twice, and they forced a fumble.
Yeah, and, you know, it's something that we've talked about with the Giants previously, too, is they're, even though they're not a very good football team, at least they're being competitive. Unlike the 49er game, that was the only one where they haven't been competitive. But if you look at it, you know, they were in week one. I don't think they could have won week one with the Steelers, but it was at least a close game. They could have won the Bear game, and then, you know, even though the Rams are a much better football team than the Giants are, they could have won this game if Daniel Jones could have gotten something going on offense. And I'm pretty sure we ripped the Giants defense last week after the 49er debacle, but the Giant defense was fantastic other than the first drive and the long Cooper Kupp touchdown. So,
and that's the side of the ball that we've criticized all offseason long. They're not any good, but they really showed me something these past, I'd say this whole season, really. Even though the Giants are 0-4, it's not a good look. This defense is so much better than we originally thought. But, they played pretty much a perfect game, besides giving up the big 55-yard touchdown to Cooper Kupp to pretty much ice the game. But this game was a one-point game heading into the fourth quarter, and the Giants were 13-point underdogs going into Los Angeles. Like, that's something you got to hang your hat on a little.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, moral victories doesn't really get you much in the NFL.
Not
especially
at all.
You know, right now with the new head coach and you're trying to figure out what Daniel Jones is as a quarterback, and, you know, turnovers again are killing Daniel Jones. But Yeah, I mean, it's a step in the right direction for this Giant team. I mean, I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago. Blake Martinez is really, you know, we didn't really know what kind of effect he'd have on this defense. It kind of seemed like he'd only be a run guy that wasn't very good in pass coverage. But, you know, he's been a huge part of this defense and a very good signing by Dave Gettleman in the offseason.
And Kyler Fackrell got a sack, another guy from the Green Bay Packers. You know, again, this is the reason why the Giants, this game was so close. And, you know, they just played very well. They played bend but don't break type defense. But it was good because how the Rams seemed to game plan a little bit and how they seemed to do it all the time is these short dink and dunk play action passes. The Giants were ready for that, I think. They kept the Rams beyond the sticks a bunch of times. They kept them in front of them besides the 55-yard Cooper Kupp play and a couple of big runs by the Rams. But I was very impressed by how the defense stuck in this game, and it's an encouraging sign, like you said. Like, moral victories don't win you football games in the NFL, but this is a bad Giants team, but this is something you can actually look forward to. You know, if the defense can keep you in games, now it's on the offense, and now we'll get to the offense, who have just been brutal these 4 weeks, pretty much. They're playing against a very good front seven, but pal, this offensive line is so bad. Like,
it's horrible.
It's horrible. Like, I can't even point out one guy, but I will, and it's Cam Fleming. Why is he in the game? Why? The guy's being spun around in circles every game. They gave up 5 sacks. Again, well, we'll get to Daniel Jones in a little bit, but this offensive line gave up 5 sacks. Again, against Aaron Donald, a very good front seven in the Rams. But Cam Fleming comes out of this game, Matt Peart comes in and replaces him. He's not much better, but you might as well just keep him in at that point because Cam Fleming is awful. He's terrible. And then you have the left tackle on the other side, the rookie Andrew Thomas, who honestly, I say this about all rookies, Scott, that you could basically take their rookie year, throw it out the window. Because they're learning the game of the National Football League. Andrew Thomas is going to go through these things. When Denzel Mims finally gets on the field, he's going to go through these things when he finally gets on the field. This is what happens to rookie players in the NFL. Especially at offensive line, especially at left tackle. Probably a top three most important position on the field. It's going to happen. These growing pains are going to happen to Andrew Thomas, so I can't kill him. But a veteran guy like Cam Fleming, who should know how to do things, especially because now his offensive coordinator was his head coach in Dallas, you should be able to do these kind of things. But, I didn't watch very closely at Matt Peart when he came in the game, but you might as well just keep him in there, get the young guy some reps a little.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Fleming, he's looked absolutely abysmal. I can think of multiple plays where his guy has just been like ole right past him.
Yeah.
And he's just freaking like spinning around trying to find someone to block, and Daniel Jones is on the ground, probably fumbled when he finally gets a body on someone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, the offensive line's horrific. I mean, the injury to Saquon Barkley doesn't help because, you know, it's weird with Saquon Barkley because the first year everyone was ready to put a gold jacket on him, and we've talked about that many times on this show.
We've been very critical of him. Like, slow your roll a little bit.
Like, second year, didn't look great. I mean, he also dealt with injuries last year. And then this year, obviously, with the torn ACL. But that Steelers team, he was horrible. Can't pass block. I'm pretty sure he had about 4 rushing yards on, like, 10 attempts or something like that. Yeah, he's a great athlete and all, but he can't stay on the field. And when he's on the field the past 2 seasons, he had a couple good games last year, but it was nothing like rookie year Saquon Barkley. It almost seems like, you know, defenses are figuring him out and they're, you know, finding the good ways to slow him down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Sterling Shepard can't stay on the field. Guys are just, you know, zoning in right on Slayton. Evan Engram is a shell of his former self, or maybe a shell of what his expectations were. I mean, Golden Tate's getting freaking body slammed by Jalen Ramsey. It's, again, another thing where another football team is ruining their, you know, young quarterback. Yeah. The Giants are kind of doing the same exact thing to Daniel Jones as they are to Sam. And I mean, Daniel Jones, like Sam, has shown, you know, that he can do it. He has, you know,
I think Daniel Jones has an NFL, like, he definitely can, like, we say this about all quarterbacks coming into the draft, like, they can make all the throws. No kidding, they can make all the throws. Of course they're NFL quarterbacks. Of course they can make all the throws. But It's one, like, arm talent's another thing. I think Daniel Jones has serious arm talent. He can play. But here's something interesting too. I'm looking at the team stats, you know, the breakdown here. The Giants, 295 total yards. The Rams, 240. The Giants had 136 rushing yards. The Rams only had 58. Giants, 159 passing yards. The Rams, 182. They beat them there. 66 total plays for the Giants. They're beating the Rams in basically every single category offensively, and they still lose the game. How is that possible?
I mean, when you can't punch the ball in the end zone, you're going to have a really hard time to win. I mean, Daniel Jones, if you look at his stat line, isn't horrible. 23 for 36, 190 yards and an interception. But that just isn't going to get it done. When you don't average like 10 yards per completion, something's wrong in the offense. I mean, we can see it clearly with Sam Darnold. I mean, Jared Goff had the same thing. He was only 200 yards on 25 completions with a touchdown. But, like, the Rams have that big play ability. The Giants, you just don't really see where they're going to get it from right now.
A lot of underneath stuff. A lot of things below the sticks. A lot of crossing
Darius
routes.
Darius Slayton's pretty much their only option for a deep threat, and he's not even getting that done right now. I mean, we saw it in the Steeler game in week one, but that was pretty much it.
Well, I think teams are now starting to look at that. They saw that week one against the Steelers, a very good defense, and now teams are looking out for Slayton because that's basically the number one option for the Giants at this point. But a little more about Daniel Jones. I'm kind of starting to feel at that point where I'm just kind of just starting to feel bad for him, like we do with Sam. Like, again, what I'm about to say, what I'm about to rattle off is, like, eerily similar to what the Jets have going on with Sam Darnold. Zero offensive line help, zero run game. Saquon's out, that's one thing. But the kid is being forced to run for his life. Like, you know, we say that about Sam all the time, but Daniel Jones had 45 rushing yards this last week. And then the game before, he led the team in rushing. He was tied with Wayne Gallman in this game for rushing yards. And the most of Wayne Gallman's yards came from a 26-yard run at the end of the game. Not to mention he was sacked five times. But, you know, some of it's not his fault. The offensive line is bad. But other times, Daniel Jones just holding on to the ball way too long. Taking such a long time to get through his progressions. Maybe guys just aren't getting open. Maybe the play call's not right, whatever it is. But he's holding on to the ball way too long. And being sacked five times, you always, with this offensive line and his history of turnovers, you got to be nervous that every time he gets hit, the ball's going to come loose.
Yeah, and I mean, we can't really kill Devontae Freeman yet because he hasn't really had a chance to get into the offense. But
he just looks old. He just looks old.
Yeah, and, you know, he had a down year last year, and people still think he's a decent running back, and, you know, the fact that he held out was kind of a weird thing based on, you know, he has a value that he saw himself for, and then, you know, maybe teams saw something different, but I think for this Giants offense to, you know, be somewhat competent, they're going to have to get him going.
Yeah. They're going to have to do this running back by committee thing, I think. I mean, right now, probably Wayne Gallman is your best running back right now. And it gives you a little... And if you really want a game plan, if you're Jason Garrett, and you really want a game plan and have Daniel Jones do some design runs, that's all and fine. But the fact that your quarterback through 4 weeks of the season is leading your team in rushing is not what you want to see. Again, if it results in wins, that's one thing. But the Giants are 0-4. It's not happening. But, and you know, and then going back to that last drive, of course, we're going to look at that interception on the last possession and say, you can't just throw that ball there. I look at, the DB just made a great play on the ball there. I watched that back. The DB just got right in front of it. Maybe Daniel Jones was a little late on the read. That's one thing, too. But the DB just made a great play on it. But again, you can't make those plays in that situation. You score a touchdown there and a two-point conversion, this is a tie game. It's a completely different ball game after that. And then, you know, all these talks going about, I think it's way too soon to be talking about getting rid of Daniel Jones, putting him off to the wayside and tanking for Trevor Lawrence. If I have to hear that the Giants are tanking for Trevor Lawrence, I just don't believe that. I just don't believe that.
I feel like that doesn't make any sense. And I mean, I don't know. I guess people could say the same thing about Sam, but like, an extra year in the NFL speaks volumes, and it's another year that you're closer that you're going to have to pay him. And even though, even if he's a crappy quarterback, you still get paid a decent amount of money towards the cap. So I agree. I don't really see the Giants going after a quarterback. I think, you know, I think they have bigger needs, especially with that Sinai Pool guy or whatever from Oregon, that offensive tackle. I could see him trying, like, maybe being an option. You sure up both, like, ends of your line with the tackles there. Maybe, you know, if he's a natural left tackle, maybe you look at moving Andrew Thomas to right tackle, because that's, you know, probably was the plan going forward with Nate Solder there if he didn't opt out. But I personally don't think the Giants, you know, maybe this is just me as a fan not wanting the Giants to take Trevor Lawrence because I want him on the Jets, but I don't really see the Giants taking a quarterback. I mean, that'll all depend on if Dave Gettleman is still here. And based on, you know, what's going on right now, I don't think he's going to be here. But then, you know, I don't see them making a coaching change with a new GM, which is a tough situation to be in. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't see the Giants going after a quarterback, and I don't really, you know, think that's a good idea. But who knows? A new GM could bring a whole different philosophy.
So, I mean, we're kind of on the same boat there. I get why Giants fans would think this, but it seems like now Trevor Lawrence is the golden prize at the end of the rainbow, that all these teams that are now winless, except for the Houston Texans, who just fired Bill O'Brien, good job by you, Houston, you know, guy like Minnesota before they got their first win, and now who's the other team that hasn't won a game yet? Giants, Jets,
Eagles.
Well, yeah, the Eagles won on Sunday Night Football. But they got quarterback issues too. But there's just a bunch of the Falcons, maybe.
Yeah.
There have been rumors swirling around trading Matt Ryan, maybe getting the number one pick for Trevor Lawrence. Now that Trevor Lawrence is this ultimate prize, now teams that are not doing so hot and maybe need a quarterback, maybe a team like the Falcons, aging quarterback. Been around for 10 plus years now. Maybe it's time, you know, fire the coach, get rid of the quarterback, get some new blood in here. I get that. But then you have the actual bad teams like the Jets, and I say teams, but bad team as the Jets, and that's that. You know, they need that quarterback. But all in all, the Giants gave us a game till the end, sucked us in until the very end, and then they had a chance to win. But the inept offense just strikes again and continues to just be horrible. Like you mentioned before, unable to get touchdowns, unable to get, you know, guys in the end zone and settling for too many field goals. Overall competitive game, but, I mean, again, we could take positives out of this when it comes to the defense. It's been rare that you get positives out of Giants losses, but I'm saying give them a shot against Dallas this week because Dallas' defense is bad.
Yeah, I just don't know. You know, their defense had a fantastic performance this week. I don't know. As much as I am not a Dak fan and I really hate the Cowboys, and the fact that he's actually asking for $40 million is just unbelievably stupid. He still threw for 500 freaking yards this week. Yeah. Like, their offense is pretty prolific. I don't know if the Giants can handle this week. Maybe they can put some points up on the board. I mean, they're going to have to figure out the offense and how to put points on the board. Because Bears, what, they scored 13 points, 7 points or 9 points against the Niners, and the 9 points again this week. They're not scoring the football. They're not getting in the end zone. And, I mean, that's horrible. I mean, their defense, one, no one expected it to be.
And then again, you can't rely on them being that good again.
So, I mean, I'm giving them a chance against Dallas. I mean, considering what they showed me against the Rams this week, I'll give them a shot. But, I mean, they got Washington the next week after that, I think. That'll probably be their best situation for their first win of the season. Before we move on to the Jets, a little message from you, pal.
Do you have thoughts you want to share? Have questions, comments, or hot takes surrounding the world of New York sports? We want to hear from you, so give us a call on the new 24/7 Tri-State Sports Beat fan line. Call our new toll-free number at 862-260-4315 and leave us a voicemail with your questions and comments so you can be heard on that week's episode of the Tri-State Sports Beat. Again, that's 862-260-4315. We can't wait to hear from you, New York sports fans.
Yeah, you guys heard it there first. We now have a fan line, 862-260-4315. At the end of the show, when we're doing all of our fun segments and whatnot, we have our first ever voicemail caller with some questions regarding the Yankees and the New York Giants. So we'll get to that later on. We're very excited about this new thing we got going on. So give us, give us a call whenever you want. 862-260-4315, 24/7, 365. All right, pal, let's get to the pain because, what else? I feel like we're, again, I said this last week, I feel like we're just running out of words at this point, 4 weeks into the NFL season. Like,
there's nothing else to say. What else can you say?
I don't know, but we're going to try our best because 37-28 Thursday Night Football. The Jets lose to the Broncos. First of all, let's get this out of the way. Undisciplined, stupid, dumb defense. Nightmare. That didn't even form a full sentence, but I don't care. Because, first of all, can we get this out of the way? Pierre Desir had the weirdest game in the history of the NFL. The weirdest. The guy
pisses me off he had a pick six because he sucks.
The guy got beat.
Or couldn't have been anyone else.
The guy got beat for 100 plus yards all day long, got put in circles. He was on a top. But he gets two interceptions, including a pick six, to get the Jets. I think that gave them the lead, didn't it? Or it made it a one score game at that point.
Yes. Yeah.
But, the guy gets beat for 100 plus yards. We're killing him all night. And then we're like, he gets two interceptions, two, and then returns one to the house, and then we're stuck there like, good, I guess? Like, should we be killing you? What do we do here? Jets fans are put in really ridiculous situations like this on a year-in, year-out basis. But on top of that, 11 penalties for 118 freaking yards, six of those personal foul penalties? What do we...
I mean, it's clear this defense does not respect this head coach.
No, this head coach or this coordinator.
Yeah, if they had any respect for the guys they played under, none of this crap would be happening. Especially the one at the end where Steve McClendon freaking hits Brett Rippon in the head in garbage time.
Unbelievable. Gase, Greg Williams, whoever. This team has, the defense has thrown it in. They have zero control and leadership on this defense. Zero. Like, you look at anybody on this team, whoever's got C's on their jersey, just rip them off. Marcus May, Steve McClendon, rip them off. This team's got no leaders. This team's got nobody you look forward to. Again, we understand this defense was not going to be as good without Jamal Adams. We get that. We fully, fully knew that coming into 2020. But this, 118 yards and penalties, six personal foul penalties, and freaking Quinnen Williams cost it. I wouldn't say they cost the Jets the game because the Jets were going to lose anyway and blow it. But, oh my, he's ridiculous. And then he's on top of Brett Rippon. He knows he committed a penalty. He still comes up like, huh? That was a penalty? Yeah, no kidding.
It was kind of unfortunate because Brett Rippon ducked his head, and Quinnen put his hands to make a nice form tackle, and unfortunately his hands got caught in his face mask.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, it's a
Your
penalty.
Your hands should be nowhere near the guy's helmet, is my point.
Well, I mean, he tried to duck underneath the tackle, and he put his helmet right where Quinnen's hands were, and of course, his hands have to, grab the face mask. And yes, it's a penalty, but it's just like unfortunate. Like, whatever. there's no point. This offense is inept. I mean, Sam gets freaking hurt because he holds onto the ball for 10,000 years. I mean, he had a great run in the first play and the first drive of the game. We're like, holy crap, he's sick. And then, he gets hurt because he hangs onto the ball for 10,000 years. This is a wide open Lawrence Cager that would have gave him a first down and would have saved him his AC joint and his freaking shoulder. Then he comes back and then, he just keeps missing open guys. I mean, the wheel route to Frank Gore, Chris Hogan was apparently wide open down the field, just completely disregarded him. I don't know if Adam Gase is telling him to only throw to his first read on every play, and he can't go through his progressions. I mean, wow, the world's coming to an end. They did a QB sneak on Thursday
on the first
night.
Drive of the game, no less.
Yeah, There's nothing. I mean, this team is so just unlikable. There's nothing to like about this football team. They all suck. They all, like, especially if Joe Flacco plays this week, what do I have to care to watch?
Nothing. Zero.
Like, I mean,
and you know damn well Joe, and you know damn well Joe Flacco's playing because Mike White was just elevated up from the practice squad. You know damn well Joe Flacco's starting this week.
I mean, we'll see. It's a big thing tomorrow to see if Sam practices at all tomorrow, because if he practices at all tomorrow, I think he's going to play Sunday. And I think they're going to try and get him on the field no matter what. I mean, I've heard that this injury is pretty much you can't get worse. It's just a matter of pain tolerance, and hopefully Sam, you know, they can shoot him up with whatever they need to. But I don't know. If Flacco plays, what's the point of watching? I mean, Mims might come back, run five routes, not get targeted, and the defense will just give up 35 points to Kyler. He'll be running circles.
Wait, you don't want to watch the train wreck? You're damn well going to watch the train wreck. I mean, come on now.
Adam Gase freaking playing tic-tac-toe on his play sheet.
That's a great,
down 25
great segue. Quarter. Great segue into the next point. A running topic over the past two seasons, Adam Gase's awful play calling and mismanagement of personnel. We just add something else to that. First off, nobody is friggin' saying anything about this that I pointed out in the game. Running the same play twice to Chris Hogan just on the opposite side of the field, Sam is literally throwing the same ball. Underthrown, you know, up in the air. What are we doing? Where is the offensive genius there that is just lazy and predictable? Back-to-back plays to Chris Hogan. Same route, just on the different sides of the field. Stupid. And then this. They get an unnecessary roughness call on a missed Sam Ficken field goal. They get an absolute prayer. And then the brilliant head coach calls two runs up the middle with 37-year-old Frank Gore. And then on third down, Sam rolls out to his left and incompletes the pass. Go figure. And they settle for a field goal. And not to mention, it was in the freaking red zone where the Jets just have allergic reactions and go, nope, don't want anything to do with that. Oh my God.
Can we also talk about the two-point conversion where he rolls Sam out to his right and gives him pretty much only one option to throw to, cuts off half the field and thinks, oh, that's a good play. Yeah, let's run that on the two-yard line.
I know last week we said there, you know, we shouldn't even yell about Gase anymore, but, like, this stuff just makes us crazy. I don't understand. And then when Sam gets hurt, you put him back in on third and medium? That's just a recipe for disaster, a must-throw situation. He comes out of the locker room. Just let Joe Flacco finish the drive at that point. You're not going to get the first down anyway, so you might as well let Flacco do something. Throw up a prayer, maybe you get the first down, I don't know. Why bring in Sam there? And of course he gets sacked and smothered right on that play. Like, what are we doing? What is happening? Like, I don't even know. I don't know anymore. And then, yeah, you mentioned the two-point conversion call, and then running Frank Gore 13 times is just inexcusable. LaMichael P. Ryan should friggin' ask to be traded because, I mean, it's criminal the way that Gase doesn't use him. Criminal! And then the cherry on top of everything else. Why was Mekhi Becton in this game? Why? Why was he even dressed? He's hurt! Franchise left tackle. Why? Why is he in the game? Huge mistake. Shouldn't even be dressed for the damn game. And now he's probably hurt worse. You know for damn well he ain't playing this week, so we're screwed. Connor McDermott's going to have to play, and Sam's going to get smothered again, or if he even plays. I don't even know.
At least the black jerseys look nice.
Oh, badass black jerseys. You know what?
Okay, hold on. Time out. Something we did not talk about with Sam's injury. How is that not roughing the freaking passer?
Oh, I don't know.
The dude suplexed him. If you do that to Patrick Mahomes, you're fined $30,000 and you're probably thrown out of the game. But no, Sam Darnold, we can throw him around like a rag doll. No penalty.
No. So, like, with that all being said about Becton and everything else, I can't say anymore that Adam Gase is just ruining Sam Darnold. He's ruining everyone! Everyone. Except for the punter, Braden Mann. Because he's got so many reps out there, he's going to be the best punter of all time. He's out there so much. And again, here's another running thing that we've talked about before, going back to last year, into this year. Gase finally went up-tempo, started to work again, and he didn't stick to it again. This offense scored one touchdown, and they scored 28 points in the game. Think about that for a second. They scored one touchdown, and they ended the game with 28 points. How does that happen? Wow. How? And then, how do you win the turnover battle 3-0? You pick off a undrafted rookie quarterback 3 times in a quarter, and you still lose. Explain me that. Notice how there's dead air. You can't.
It's unbelievable. I mean, a positive from this game, if you want to find one. Jeff Smith actually looked decent. Looked sure. Like he gave a little something to the offense, a little speed that
had 81
Sam
yards.
Needed.
Had 81 yards. He was good. Crowder went for over 100 yards. Great.
Yeah, Crowder comes back. He's a stud. I mean, he's the only person that Sam can actually throw the ball to competently. Let's see if Perriman comes back this week. I mean, who the freak knows? Mims could come off of IR this week. Vincent Smith could come off of IR this week.
What can we expect from Denzel Mims, though, even this whole entire year?
You better freaking hope for something.
I don't know. But then we get to Sam, who, of course, is going to be the story every single week as this awful, dreaded season goes on. But again, Sam shows some flashes here, and again, we learn absolutely nothing. The long 46-yard touchdown run was fantastic. He improvised real well, awesome. It was viral on social media for a couple hours. LeBron loved it. Everyone loved the run by Sam. No interceptions, that's a plus, but no touchdowns. There's no aggression here, but there's no progress. So Sam is just basically in neutral at this point in the season. Sacked 6 times and trips over his own damn feet. And the first thing I heard, the first thing I saw on Twitter about that, Scott, oh, the ghost must have got him.
Yep. That was the talk. Of course it was.
Does Christopher Johnson like this? Like, I really have to wonder. Does he?
Or how about that ad that Fox ran? Oh. Forget Me Not or
Forget
something
me
like
not.
That? Yeah, like...
Where can I get some of that?
Christopher Johnson, I don't understand. I really don't. He thinks that, pulling the plug on Gase is going to show future coaching options, that they're impatient, that they make rash decisions, that coaches don't have a chance. How about we look at Arizona? Got rid of their quarterback, fired their head coach after 1 year. San Francisco fired their coach after 1 year. They both got pretty decent head coaches now, don't they, you freaking moron?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I give Sam some brownie points for coming back into the game, the sprained shoulder and all that good stuff. But at this point, I don't know where I can expect Sam to be. Can I expect him to be better or worse? Like, I'm starting to think that Sam can just not be salvaged and that this regression is just too far gone. I love the kid. I do want him to succeed. I say this. I've said this for 4 straight weeks. I love Sam. He's my guy. I hope that he's still given another chance once Gase is gone. I really want to see what he does without Gase, but that's not going to happen until next year. And when next year comes, who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Funny, he's not going to succeed here. I don't think it even matters. Like, I just think if you have the number one overall pick, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is as close to a sure thing, I think, that you can get as a quarterback coming out of the draft. I mean, look at Andrew Luck.
You're the Jets, nothing is ever a sure thing. That's the problem.
The biggest problem is, in the past couple of years, we have not had a guy in charge of football operations who has a brain. You look at John Idzik, he was horrible. You look at Mike Maccagnan, he's a freaking moron. The fact that he even liked Adam Gase, you should just never be in football ever again. But I think we hope we finally have a guy who's competent in the football operations part of this, with that Joe Douglas, who's going to, you know, target a good head coach that he thinks can, you know, prosper here and make Sam, well, probably not Sam, but maybe Sam, you know,
someone
bring this offense to at least like competency, like make them a little bit creative. I mean, Adam Gase doesn't even freaking run motion because he thinks it slows down the offense.
I don't understand but like, it.
I mean, Tannenbaum was the closest thing we've had to a good GM in the past couple years or 10 years or whatever. It went from Tannenbaum to Idzik, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, Rex, you know, Tannenbaum, who knows who identified Rex as a head coach? I mean, you want to talk about how Rex had under 500 records for the majority of his coaching career. He brought us to 2 AFC championship games. I don't care. He had an under 500 record. Like, Rex Ryan is their best head coach probably in the 2000s. In the entire 2000s. I mean, you want to talk about Herm Edwards? He was not bad. Mancini had a good staff behind him, but, you know, things went awry there with ownership and whatever.
Well, that's because ownership wanted to bring in Brett Favre and had an excuse then to now fire Mangini the year after.
Yeah. But who was the head coach for Favre then?
It was Mangini.
Oh, so was it Rex?
No, it was Mangini. Oh. They fired Mangini after they, you know, after the whole thing happened Favre got hurt and they finished like crap.
The whole before Rex thing is just kind of a blur for me. Because it's the only thing we can remember as, like, competent football.
No, I mean, the best stretch that we've seen was 2009 to 2010. And Joe Beningo brought this up on FAN, too. The best era, probably, of Jets football doesn't even include the 1969 Super Bowl victory. It's from about 1998 to 2011. 2010, maybe. Like, yeah. What does that say? That's a 10-year gap right there, and you're saying that's the best, and you don't even get to the Super Bowl? I mean, this organization, bottom line, this organization just does not care about winning, because we didn't even talk about how they didn't fire Gase. I mean, we were probably stupid for even thinking that they were gonna. And yeah, he's gonna be the head coach for the rest of the year. We were stew nods for even thinking that Christopher Johnson, whoever freaking runs the team, I don't care anymore, was gonna fire Adam Gase midseason.
Well, let's be honest. If Woody was here, he'd be gone.
I would hope so.
Because Woody's known for being very, like,
trigger happy.
He makes a lot of emotional decisions.
But, you know, now we're in franchise history territory. This is the first time in franchise history they've started 0-4 in back-to-back years. Rich Kotite didn't even get a second year. So in my book, Adam Gase is the worst head coach the Jets have ever had. He's worse than Rich Kotite. He's worse than Lou Holtz. How do you not fire this guy after losing to an undrafted third-string rookie quarterback and a practice squad defense? Just speaks volumes to me. I almost knocked my headset off in anger. That how do you not fire this coach when it's the signs are all there?
And let me tell you, PSA to Christopher Johnson. If you even think about bringing Bill O'Brien in here as the head coach... I don't even want to go into it.
I'll give you another name.
If we keep speaking about it, it's going to happen.
Pal, I'll give you another name. Matt Patricia.
Oh, my goodness. If they bring him in here, if they bring in Bill O'Brien or Matt Patricia, the fans might actually burn down one Jets drive. If they bring either of those two people in to be the head coach of this football team, the league should step in and take the Johnsons out of ownership because they are literally creating a competitive imbalance. Oh, man.
But you know what? Scott? They don't want to fire Adam Gase because they think it'll hurt Sam's development.
Yeah. Is Deshaun Watson going to be ruined because he doesn't have Bill O'Brien as his head coach anymore?
No. He might actually be better. No, we don't want to fire Gase because it'll ruin Sam's development. Let me tell you something, Christopher Johnson. It's too late, you moron. We go on to week number 5, and the Jets have the Cardinals, who just coming off a tremendous loss to the Carolina Panthers.
Two straight losses.
So, you know, they're hungry. They want to eat the Jets alive. And I mentioned it before. If I were to tell you right now on Tuesday, October the 6th, Sam is not probably playing in this game. It's probably going to be Flacco because Mike White was just elevated. And breaking news, the Jets released Kalen Ballage.
Thank goodness.
That's the
first smart thing they've done since I couldn't even tell you.
And then probably no Becton, probably no Fant. Cardinals coming off two straight losses. They're hungry. Another week, another potential freaking disaster with this.
The great third down blocking back of Kalen Ballage, who Adam Gase just refuses to play LaMichael Perine. And I'll quote Adam Gase, the only guy on our offense right now who has the potential to break a 60-yard run. How about you play him? Stop running.
It makes zero sense.
On the Can't Wait podcast this morning, someone commented to them saying, Adam Gase hasn't given Frank Gore a break since World War I. But yet he continues to run him up the gut, straight up the middle, where he gets 3 yards, and he just continues to do it. It's actually dumb. It is actually asinine how stupid he is.
But you know what? He's an offensive mastermind.
That should be put in the Hall of Fame for the worst takes of all time.
What a freaking circus the New York Jets are.
Let's make a circus swing of the Hall of Fame, and the opening quote will be from Christopher Johnson saying, Adam Gase is a brilliant offensive mind. And all the busts will be Adam Gase's face, or at least Adam Gase's will be, in a clown afro and a freaking red nose.
Yeah, they'll have him stand at one Jets drive and greet everybody. And then, of course, there's gonna have to be the frame. It's gotta be framed, of course. It's gotta be a framed napkin written on it from Bill Belichick that says, I resign as HC of the NYJ. That has to be there. Has to be in there. Unreal. Unfreaking believable. And not to mention, the Cardinals really pissed us off this week because they couldn't freaking beat the Carolina Panthers and lost us some money. But that's for, you know, the Friday NFL picks. So, of course, stay tuned for that. So that's it for New York football. We spent the first 40 freaking minutes just complaining as we do every single week. And it's never going to get any better. It's never going to get any better this year, I don't think. But that is what it is. We will take our first break. We move on. We will move on to happier pastures as the New York Yankees are the only thing we have to look forward to in New York sports. So we will talk about that when we come back. You're listening to the Tri-State Sports Beat. Do not go anywhere. We will be right back.
Now, if you listen to our Yankees preview of the ALDS series, we talked about how important Game 1 was last night and to get a great start from Gerrit Cole. Well, we maybe didn't get a fantastic start from Gerrit Cole, but at least the Yankees freaking won and they rolled the Rays out of the building.
Love it. Freaking love it. I guess since you just brought up Cole, we'll start with him. You said it probably best. I mean, he was good. But Cole just didn't have his best stuff last night against
his command was not there.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, he gives up the game tying home run in the bottom of the first inning off a four seam fastball. And then naturally, because all the storylines were coming in from G-Man Choi, how he dominates Gerrit Cole, naturally he hits a 2-run homer off of him to give the Rays the 1-run lead in the fourth inning. Again, off a low and away four seam fastball. So my takeaway is that fastball struggled for Gerrit a little bit. Let off those couple runs on the four seam fastball. Left some up in the zone, but his curveball was absolutely unhittable last night. I think he only managed to get one hit off his knuckle curveball. It was fantastic, unfreaking hittable last night. But luckily, the offense, you know, led by everyone else, like Stanton, Judge, and everyone we'll get to in a minute, bailed him out along with the bullpen getting it done. You know, the three amigos, Chad Green, Britton, and, you know, they didn't need Chapman, but Luis Sessa came in the game and got it done. So, again, overall solid performance by Cole, but it's not the Cole we all know and love.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the offense and how important it was. I mean, I think I would have brought Cole back for the seventh, but I can understand the decision, too, if you want to bring him back on short rest for game five. You don't really want him, you know, stretch him too much to say if he, you know, has a longer inning to 115, 120 pitches. He threw 97 pitches, which, you know, is a normal number for him or in baseball this season, you know, for the matter of fact. But the offense, I mean, you look at guys who stepped up last night. I mean, we've talked about Aaron Hicks and how he struggled at the plate last night or over the season. Last night he was 3-for-4, two RBIs, one run. He had the sack. Did he have the sack fly in the first?
Yeah.
Brought home to get the game going. And then he also had the RBI single in the ninth too, to get that big inning going. But then, you know, dare I may say it, did Giancarlo Stanton earn his pinstripes last night with the grand slam in the ninth inning?
You know what's
inning.
Funny? I have that in my notes that you said that. I was going to bring that up before, but you already beat me to it.
Did Giancarlo Stanton earn the pinstripes last night? Even though he went 1-for-4, he maybe had the biggest hit of the night.
I want to say yes, but it's only game one, you know?
He's hit three home runs so far this postseason. Two of them have been huge.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not really hitting the ball in any other way, but gets on base last night with a walk, too. You can tell he's locked in at the plate because he's laying off some fantastic pitches from pitchers.
Yeah, that's for sure. And he just looks meaner than ever.
Like, yeah.
He was staring into that poor, I think it was Curtis or something, whoever was on the mound. He was staring into his soul and was like, I'm going to take you deep into center field. And like, you know, and we were joking. And I was like, oh, here come, you know, bases loaded. Stan's going to freaking go into a double play. And you're like, this is where Stan, you know, you didn't say this is where he'll earn his pinstripes, but you say, maybe this is where he earns his pinstripes. And sure and shit, he goes, I don't remember how long the home run was, but it was a very long way. But he goes yard and the Yankees break the game open. But let's talk about a little before then. You know, you mentioned Hicks getting up, you know, getting the early run in the first inning. That was a real big thing that we said in the preview that they needed to get to Blake Snell early, and that's exactly what they did. Kept his pitch count up. I think he was up to like something, I think it was like 40-something pitches through three innings or something like that. I forget exactly, but
yeah, the first inning they got it up to about 20-25 pitches.
Yeah, and I think that was on two occasions, I'm pretty sure. I think the first inning and I'm pretty sure the fourth, I think.
See,
I could be wrong.
What they're doing here is something that's very effective. Is you can tell that the Yankees are being very aggressive and early, they're like early in the counts.
Yeah.
But if they're not seeing pitches that they, you know, love early in the counts, then they're working them. There's a lot of like, I mean, DJ's at bat to get off to lead off the game. It was a 9 or 10 pitch at bat to start,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, gets the single right up the middle, which is a fantastic way to start. But you can tell just their approach is they're trying to be aggressive here. They're not just waiting. They're not, you know, waiting for that, you know, get me over strike one.
Mm-hmm.
If any of the Rays pitchers throw that, they're going to be all over it.
Sure. Absolutely. And then our boy, Aaron Boone, the lineup comes out. Clint Frazier in for Gardy. We're all hyped, love to see it. And of course, Clint Frazier doesn't disappoint. Hits an absolute bam, 418 feet into left field. Gives the Yankees a 2-1 lead at that point. You know, then, of course, the G-Man Choi thing happens. The Yankees down one. And then, not Gary Sanchez, comes up to the plate, and Kyle Higashioka, home run. Judge comes up, home run, good night, Blake Snell, go sit your ass down in the dugout. Two home runs in the fifth inning, one run lead, 4-3, sets up the beautiful inning from the Yankees. Stanton hits the grand slam to ice the game, and that's when you said maybe he earns his pinstripes. You got some magic in your voice there, pal, I think. I think you should say that a bunch of times after every, you know, I think this is where Kyle Higashioka earns his pinstripes. And then he, you know, if he's in the lineup tonight, hits a home run. I have an eerie feeling, though, he will not be in the lineup, and it'll be Gary Sanchez. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
See, I just think, you know, I mean, we'll get to this, I guess, now. With Davey Garcia starting tonight, mm-hmm. I feel like you have to put someone back there that you're going to be able to have confidence in throwing the ball to.
Yeah.
Especially with Davey Garcia, who kind of relies on a breaking ball. I mean, he doesn't have the most powerful fastball. He throws it about 90 to 92. You just want a guy who you know is going to be able to field the ball behind the plate. I mean, is that too much to ask?
No.
Like, and it's not like Higashioka is just freaking an automatic out at the plate. I mean, he shows you last night that he has home run pop.
And he showed it against Cleveland.
Yeah. Like, it's – to me, I would continue to play Higashioka. I mean, I know Gary had a – you know, he hit the home run and had a decent game too against Cleveland, but – just fielding-wise, Higashioka just makes such a big difference behind the plate.
Yeah, absolutely. For Garcia tonight against Glasnow, I'm nervous and both excited for Davey Garcia tonight. He's going to be the youngest postseason starter in Yankees history to start a postseason game. I'm excited because he's good, and I love what I saw in the regular season, but I'm also nervous because he didn't face this Rays lineup this year. A little concerning. You know, he faced the Blue Jays twice, pitched pretty well. You know, there's less pressure on Davey Garcia because they won last night, and we talked about that last night as well. If they won this game, I can hop on the idea of pitching Davey Garcia in Game 2. But if they lost last night, I'd be a little more scared and nervous than excited because I'm a big believer in you put your best pitchers out there in a row. Like, I'm not going to say I hate or love pitching Davey Garcia tonight. You know, there's less pressure on him because they won last night with Gerrit Cole on the mound, but there's still pressure to perform here. And Aaron Boone has now shown that he has confidence in Davey Garcia. Now go out there and pitch like you know how to. Me personally, it's just my opinion. I think it should have been Tanaka tonight, but you also brought up the great point last night that he pitches extraordinarily well on extra rest. So giving Tanaka that extra day off hopefully pays dividends if the Yankees are going into Game 3 tied 1-1.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to the whole catcher situation too, I've been looking back at Davey Garcia's starts, or at least trying to find them in the season. And you know, he was pitching a lot to Eric Kratz in the beginning because they came up together through the minor leagues, and it was kind of like that father-son thing, you know, the pitcher and the catcher.
Right.
But other than that, he has pitched to Gary every single start. And, you know, he's had very good starts. I mean, he's thrown multiple seven-inning starts. He had a 6 2/3 against the Marlins where he had seven hits, four earned, but seven strikeouts. In, you know, he goes at least into the seventh inning. If he can give you that in the playoffs tonight, I mean, I think you'll take it. If you can, you know, 6 innings, 3 runs. I mean, I don't know if Boone will stretch him that much in his first playoff start, but, you know, I guess walking back on that, on the catcher who I would start, I mean, maybe you have to start Gary tonight because it looks like, based on what I saw, I mean, maybe I missed the start, but I don't think he's pitched to Higashioka in the major leagues before. I'm sure he's pitched to him in the minors, but, you know, hopefully Gary can keep it hot and, I guess you start Gary tonight based on – because you want to make the pitcher, especially Davey Garcia, you want to make him as comfortable as possible. I mean, if Eric Kratz was on this roster, would we be talking about should you start Eric Kratz tonight in a postseason game so he can, you know, pitch to him? But I think he's going to start Gary. I think he's pretty much only going to start Higashioka when Gerrit Cole starts.
And, of course, when Gary gets up to the plate, we're going to kill him once he, you know, lines out and does whatever.
Hopefully he'll have another game like Game 2.
Hopefully.
It's the Game 2 mojo.
Game 2 mojo. Before we take our next break, something we don't do very often on here is give credit to Aaron Boone. Listen, you and I were on FaceTime last night and we wanted to complain about Aaron Boone. You know, when he, you know, we didn't love when he put Guardy in for Clint Frazier in the sixth inning. You know, even though Guardy got hit by a pitch, got on base, you know, it didn't result in any runs, we were like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this in the sixth inning? You gave me that look like, you know, what is going on? And then I have to give him credit between Boone and Tyler Wade, two guys we're not huge fans of on here. Boone puts Tyler Wade in the game in the ninth, and it ends up being a smart move. He worked a walk to load the bases, and that led to the Stanton Grand Slam to put the game away. So I got to give credit a little bit to Aaron Boone there. We do say that he overmanages a ton, which he does. But last night, he was pressing all the right buttons, and hopefully he continues to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, the bullpen came through last night. I mean, there really wasn't even that much to worry about. I mean, we were scared when Chad Green came in the game because, you know, it was just Chad Green, and we saw what he did in Cleveland. Even though he didn't give up the earned run of his own, it was an inherited run. But, yeah, I don't know. Like you said, he pushed all the right buttons. The biggest thing was we didn't have to pitch Chapman last night. That's one less game that you're going to have to, you know, use him for. The fact that Luis Sessa got through the ninth was huge. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, maybe tonight you can, if that comes to be a thing, you can extend Chapman a little more, maybe pitch him like an inning and a third or an inning and two thirds like he did in Cleveland in game two. But
that's scary. I don't like that. That's scary when that happens, I think. When Chapman has to pitch more than an inning, more than three outs.
I think that's an underrated thing that, you know, maybe a lot of people are talking about, but I haven't seen a lot on Twitter, is Chapman didn't have to pitch last night.
Right.
So
I don't know.
I mean, Britton and Green did have kind of, you know, higher pitch innings. I think Green had 20 pitches. Britton had 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not huge pitch counts, but something, you know, you would have liked. It would have been amazing if they could have got out in 10, 15 pitches.
All right. So game two is tonight. Davey Garcia against Glasnow for the Rays. 8:10 on TBS. We're going to be up late again. Probably.
Thank goodness these next games are only at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, thank God. But the Yankees are the one thing that excites us, and we have something to look forward to. So we will be definitely tuning into the Yankees tonight. There's also, what else is going on tonight? You said tonight's a big sports night.
NHL draft.
NHL draft tonight. And speaking of that,
the finals on tonight too?
The NBA finals, I believe, are on tonight.
They last played Sunday, so if they're going every other day, it would be on tonight.
Yeah. They are on tonight. Just in case,
I don't really care about that.
Just in case you're a Canadiens Blue Jackets fan, the Canadiens have sent forward Max Domi. Oh, it just locked on me. Sorry.
Just for some other guy.
Max Domi and a third round pick to the Blue Jackets in exchange for forward Josh Anderson. Just in case there's any Blue Jackets or Canadiens fans out there, I don't know if that's a big deal, but okay. Joe would probably be freaking out. That's a big deal. I don't know. I only follow the teams that, you know, surround us, so that's that. But
when Joe gets on here, we'll ask him about the impact of that trade.
Yeah, of course. And when also we come back, Joe will be, I don't know if Joe's going to start crying or if he's got a speech prepared, but Joe will probably be looking back on the illustrious career of legendary New York Rangers goaltender Henrik Lundqvist, how he's been buyed out by the Rangers. I think he's still looking to play, but we'll see what happens there. Joe will talk some NHL draft and all that stuff. And after that, we'll finish out with our first ever phone call voicemail. We'll answer questions and stuff like that. Tri-State Sportsbook and Fun with Phonics with Joe. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Tri-State Sports Beat.
And welcome back, everyone, to the Tri-State Sports Beat. We are now joined by Ranger Joe.
Ranger Joe
is back from, he's back from getting his pearly whites cleaned. Before he gives his memoriam for the second best metropolitan goalie in our lifetime, he wants to talk about the good old New York dumpster fire called the Jets.
Oh yeah, wonderful.
Just your thoughts, quick, Joe.
They're okay. Trash. Dumpster fire. If you didn't see my edit, go like my edit. I mean, that's just, it's gold. It's gold.
It is pretty good.
Coach Adam Gase even commented on it.
I don't even know what to put. Like, they finally put up some points. I guess we could start there, but I mean,
the defense let up more.
You still couldn't win with 30, whatever, how many points they had, like
28.
I don't know. It's whatever. They are going 0-16. The tank for Trevor is on, even though I don't think Trevor is going to make a difference behind this, debacle of an offensive line with no running back for him, no weapons to throw to. So I don't know. It's awesome. Being a New York Jets fan is awesome.
Oh boy. So it's not really.
No. If you didn't If you didn't hear the sarcasm in my voice, it is not really awesome. Do not be a New York Jets fan.
If you have kids, don't raise them to be Jets fans, please.
No.
Don't do it. Just
don't raise them
to be like Packer fans.
Yeah.
Don't sure. buy them a stock in the right. team and
raise them Packer fans. Right.
Scott, where did you go wrong in that situation?
Yeah, I don't know. I have the plaque above my bed. That's and what still chose turmoil.
All right, Joe, this is your time to shine now. Go ahead.
Give your eulogy for the second best metropolitan goaltender.
All right. Calm down. Yes, the New York Rangers bought out Henrik Lundqvist. I saw it coming from a mile away. I'm not super fazed by it. Yes, am I upset that he is no longer on the team? Of course, because he is the best, the GOAT, greatest goalie of all time, in my eyes. But it was his time. Like,
he smoke up my ass.
He wasn't producing anymore for the New York Rangers. They have two young stud goaltenders behind him waiting to become starters. So, I mean, I saw it coming. It's not that I'm super upset about how they did it or anything. Like, I think they did it pretty well, pretty by the book. But you look back on all the good times that Henrik Lundqvist had with the Rangers, going to the Stanley Cup, going to the Eastern Conference Finals, going to the playoffs for numerous years, all the wins, all the amazing saves that he had. And he's going to go down as one of the best goaltenders of all time, without a doubt. So congratulations to him. I hope he finds somewhere that can bring him further than just to the Stanley Cup finals and actually get him a cup that he deserves. I would not be bothered by him winning. I was not bothered by Ryan McDonagh winning. I was a little bothered at Shattenkirk winning because he is just trash.
Olé!
That's what Henrik tells when a puck comes near him.
And he still somehow makes a save. But
I don't think so.
I hope that he finds a cup and a ring one of these days. But if not, I still believe he's going down as one of the best goaltenders of all time.
Now, in all seriousness, as much as that's what the Shooters did at the end of his career. Pull! They knew it was going in.
No, that's he. No, he gets pulled to be replaced.
Oh.
In all seriousness.
Yeah.
You know, you have to respect him for what he did. He was a good goalie. Not as good as Martin Brodeur, but, you know, definitely cemented himself in NHL history as one of the best goalies of all time. Now, to stay on the ice, the NHL draft is this evening.
Correct.
Even though the Rangers have the number one pick, it's quantity over quality.
So, Joe, are the Rangers going to draft Lafreniere tonight?
I'm going to say yes. Like, I haven't heard much about like a trade really offer, trade rumors. Yeah, but that's a nice arsenal to their offense. Yeah,
especially the Red Wings bailed the Rangers offense. Out by taking Stahl. The Red Wings bailed them out by taking that horrible contract.
You know, I was looking at some mock drafts, and I don't see the Rangers taking a defenseman at all in the first round, which is weird because they do have two. They have that first overall pick, and then they have like the 20th or 22nd, like between 20 and 22, they have that pick too. So I'm kind of surprised that nobody has them picking a defenseman because their defense is just god awful right now. And especially with doing away with Stahl, like I think that they need somebody back there that's going to really solidify the blue line.
Especially after you traded, Brady Shea. In the regular season.
Yeah, it was regular season. That's actually how we came about getting Carolina's
Hurricanes pick.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited for the Devils tonight. I mean, as long as they don't take this freaking goalie at 7. Don't take freaking Yaroslav Askarov at 7. Freaking Tom Fitzgerald. I saw one mock draft. They were taking the Rossi kid.
I'm looking at one right now, and it's saying Alexander Holtz.
Yeah, he's a winger, I think.
Right wing. He plays left wing as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back to the mock draft that they that the Athletic did a couple.
They're saying Holtz can go as high as 3 and as low as 12. So,
yeah, but this draft was always talked about as being one of the deepest drafts in recent years. I mean, you look at like when Nico was drafted, there was pretty much only those top two targets, and there's a pretty decent drop off. I mean, Nico has been better than Nolan Patrick has been in their first couple seasons in the NHL. I mean, you look at the Jack Hughes draft. I don't think there was too much below him. Yeah, so that like people have compared this draft to some of the deeper ones in NHL history. The Athletic had the Devils taking Jamie Drysdale, a defenseman from the Erie Otters. Maybe that's good because McDavid came from there.
But, oh, Joe, did you also see the news that McDavid has COVID? Did you see that?
I did see that. Yeah, good.
Not COVID friendly.
There's a lot of
my boy Tony Finau,
the Holtz guy, that Holtz guy that I mentioned. Yeah. There's a lot of comparisons to Jack Eichel, the way he handles the puck, his shooting ability. Oh.
Sorry to interrupt you, Joe. But did you hear the rumor that the Rangers were going to trade for Jack Eichel?
Yeah, which might be that first overall pick. That's like the only thing that I've heard so far. But I mean, you're going to package a lot with Jack Eichel just to get Lafreniere.
So would you do that? It's pretty enticing offer, Joe.
It is. I mean, I wouldn't mind Jack Eichel, but I think that I don't think we
use the number two
need
pick.
To do
right?
it if we have, yeah. I don't think we need to do it if we get Lafreniere. The trade off is just it doesn't make sense. So
fair enough.
But just to look at 18 and 20 for the Devils, real quick too. According to the Athletic, they have the Devils taking Rodion Amarov, some KHL guy, left winger. And then Lucas Reichel, a left winger from Berlin. So if you ask me about anything about them, I couldn't tell you. But
that's the thing about this this draft is like after Lafreniere, it literally is anywhere. Because I'm looking at a draft and none of those guys pop up for the Devils. Yeah. So it's not like the NFL draft where you could like they're in a range between this and that one. It literally could be anybody.
Yeah, I've also seen the Devils very interested in this Jack Quinn guy. He's from the OHL from Ottawa. They've interviewed him twice, I think. So I think there was some speculation that I think it would be a reach for 7, but they could trade up one of their 18 or 20 picks and take him in like the 12-13 range. So should be interesting. The Devils could also package one of those first-round picks for someone like Mikhail Sergachev, who's been shopped around by Tampa. Who apparently his wife does not like Tampa or something like that, so he's a restricted free agent. So they Tampa also has like major cap issues at the moment too. They need to get players off the cap. So I don't know. We'll see. It should be interesting. I think it starts in about a half hour. So
very interesting. See what happens.
The NHL draft is the hardest one to know. The MLB draft too, but the NHL one, there's so much international like stuff going on.
There's always just that one person that's like
the
apple of everybody's eye, but you know, the only team that can get them is the team that has number one pick. So that's
Who's that? Who's that?
It was raked.
Yeah, it was raked.
Oh my god.
They just had to even it out.
They had to make sure that the Rangers were the team that got the number one pick and not the Knicks. You know. It makes sense. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right. So, gentlemen, we are making history here on the Tri-State Sports Beat because we have our first ever voicemail left for us. So this will go down in history. So, without further ado, our first ever phone call is from Colton in Bethlehem. Colton, what is on your mind, pal?
This is Colton Link. I'm calling from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I just have a few questions I want to ask. Specifically about the Yankees and Giants. We'll start with the Yankees. I know they got the win yesterday in game one and they look very dominant, but do you guys think they'll be able to keep it up or do you think they're going to live and die by the long ball? Because they hit 4 home runs yesterday, I believe. And yeah, now it just seems like that's what they're going to go by now, the long ball. I mean, it was nice to see the grand slam in the ninth that put the Rays away, but yeah, I'm just a little concerned with the series going forward that they're going to get too many runs from home runs, and that's what's going to be the downfall. They need to learn how to put the ball in play. And then for the Giants, my question is, how many wins do you need to see from the team to have Daniel Jones stay as the quarterback, because I don't think they want to get rid of him after wasting a sixth round or a sixth overall pick on him. What do you guys think? Like, how many wins should the Giants get before they should consider moving on? All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. That was Colton from Bethlehem. Joe, I'm sorry that there were no hockey questions.
Colton from Bethlehem, yeah, I'm a fan. It's on your mind, Colton.
And, of course, if you want to call us 24-7, 365, 862-260-4315. All right, so, Scott, I guess we'll tackle that question because Joe knows nothing about baseball and he's proud of it.
That might be an all-time stop. Will the Yankees rely on the long ball? Yes, they will.
Do you think this it'll lineup be like, is built? Do you think it'll be like their downfall? I think it was. Really
yes, it always is. This lineup is usually strikeout or bust. I mean, it's nice that Gio Urshela now is, you know, putting the ball in play. Aaron Hicks put the ball in play last night. I mean, you have a guy like DJ LeMahieu who was literally built on putting the ball in play. But they're big hitters. I mean, Aaron Judge, I'm pretty sure his only hits this postseason are home runs. Giancarlo, maybe the same thing. This lineup is built for strikeout or bust or home run or bust.
Yeah.
It just the way this lineup has been built, unfortunately, which, you know, is something that I've been critical of the past couple seasons, but I think this is going to rely on the long ball. I don't, other than last night, when's the last time you saw the Yankees manufacture a run like last night?
Probably I would say middle of the season at least.
Yeah. Like DJ gets on first pitch. He gets over to second on a wild pitch, moves over to third on a ground ball, and then, you know, sack fly to score him. When's the last time you saw the Yankees manufacture a run like that?
Yeah, Joe, when was that? Couldn't tell you.
Last season, probably.
I don't know. I kind of think about it this way. If you're scoring runs and winning games, like, does it really matter how you score runs? Like, I don't know.
No, as long as they're scoring runs, yeah. But you like tiptoe a very fine line.
Yeah, their inability to put the ball in play instead of, you know, rather than just hitting home run. I get the question. I don't know. I think it just depends on if they're winning games. Like if they're hitting home runs and winning games, then that's the magic formula. But, you know, if they're hitting home runs and losing and just not getting guys on base, then yeah, I can see where it could be an issue. Yeah, that's a good question. And then the second one was about Daniel Jones and how many wins do the Giants have to have in order to, you know, really consider keeping Daniel Jones around. You know, Scott and I, we said it before when we were talking about the Giants, was that I think it's just way too early to give up on Daniel Jones completely. I understand the, you know, the sexy option would be tank for Trevor, but I think at least two or three teams are going to be doing that, including the Jets. I don't think you have to put a certain number on the wins because the Giants are not going to be a good team. The Giants are going to be picking top five this year. I really can't put a number on it. I just think you got to see progression from Daniel Jones. It's hard because they don't have a good offensive line. Saquon's out. So I don't know how much progression you're really going to see and how Giants fans are really going to feel at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Giants are going to go 0-16. I mean, they have to play the Redskins, who are also a very bad football team. You know, maybe you can squeak one out against the Eagles, who, yeah, did win on Sunday Night Football, but didn't do it very convincingly against a banged up and, you know, backup filled lineup in the 49ers. I don't know. I think, you know, I see the Giants going like 3-13, somewhere along those lines. I don't think they're going to give up on Daniel Jones, as we mentioned earlier in the show. So, unless they go like 0-16, he fumbles like 15 times in the rest of the season. Like, unless he looks like completely broken and just unfixable, then maybe you have the discussion.
I think that's also hard to judge because, no pun intended, but they have a new head coach, like a new system. And,
good one.
Dang, well, it's hard to Joe Judge. Pun not intended. Anyway, well, I think. I think it's hard because they have a new head coach, they got a new offensive system, and, you know, it's his second offense in 2 years. So, I don't know. I'm not saying give him some slack, but like I said before, I feel bad for him because he's got so much that's not going on around him, I guess you could say.
It's like our beloved Samuel.
Yeah. Joe, you got any thoughts on this subject?
I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, you can't really judge him on, again, no pun intended, but you can't really judge him on this season simply because it's a new coach. We can't even say he was a high-tier draft. Well, he was a high-tier draft pick, but, like, he wasn't on anybody's board. So it's kind of like a high-risk, high-reward type thing.
Yeah.
So I think you got to give him time to develop, especially that kind of player. I think he needs at least a few more years to really see if he's an elite quarterback. Yeah. Anyway,
I agree.
This isn't like the like a Josh Rosen situation.
No. Yeah, no.
I don't think the Giants are even built for that kind of situation right now, where they're just a quarterback away, and like the Cardinals, they can compete just like that.
And you see a lot of flashes from Sam, not from Sam Darnold.
You see flashes from him too.
Well, yes, you do. But I'm saying you see a lot of flashes from Daniel Jones. So, like, you can't really put him on the hot seat yet. Just a matter of putting the right pieces around him.
Yeah. I think it's difficult. But thank you, Colton, for the questions. Thank you for calling. And again, off to the audience, 862-260-4315, 24/7 fan line. Call anytime you want. We'll put you on the show next week. So with that out of the way, Joe, are you ready? Are you ready to get out of this 1-for-12, or was it 2-for-12? I think you're 2-for-12 on names here, pal. I think you got to start trying a little harder. No, I'm sorry. 2-for-16. I'm sorry.
I'm doing this again.
Yeah, I have to. It's a tradition now.
I'm very excited for this one.
Scott and I, you know, when we were trying to figure out our technical issues before you got on here, Joe, we're actually crying laughing. So we anticipate
wonderful.
We anticipate some good stuff. On
it's absolutely wonderful.
Fun with Phonics with Ranger Joe.
Fun with Phonics with
Ranger Joe.
It's got a hard name.
All right, Joe, here are your first two names. We're going to wait until after you finish that to give you the other names. A little suspense for you. All right, Joe, did you get them? Are you ready?
No, I didn't get them.
You didn't get them?
No, I don't think
he got them, so he got them.
They're not coming through.
Liar! All right. First up, this man is a former American football defensive tackle. He played college football for the University of Oregon and earned consensus All-American honors. He was drafted by the Baltimore Ravens in the first round of the 2006 NFL Draft and was selected to the Pro Bowl 5 times. Joe, his name is
Haloti Ngata.
Wow. Oh, good.
You knew that one? Good.
No, I didn't. Was that actually right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Nice.
You like knew that. You definitely
reeled that.
I swear to you, no, I didn't. I figured that
too good
G,
at this.
I felt that G was silent. Just had something in me tingling.
Haloti Ngata.
All right, Joe, very good. You're off to a hot start. All right, this next one. Yeah, I don't think you're going to get this one at all. But this man is a former German professional footballer who usually played as a central midfielder. Earlier in his career, he primarily played as a wide midfielder. His name is
Bastien? Is that the first name?
It's kind of close.
Bastien?
Bastien.
Schweinsteiger.
That was close.
I'm getting good at this.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
See, when you rattle off like the explanation of where they're from and stuff, it messes me up, so I can't pronounce it. So I turn my volume on my headset all the way down.
So you don't hear the
right.
That's cheating. Cheater. Cheater.
No.
Cheater.
I don't think it's cheating. I'll let it pass. Joe, I can't give you that one. I'm sorry. All right, here is the third one. And just the third one.
This is like, could go so wrong.
Joe. This man was a former relief pitcher who never played in the major leagues. He was drafted by the Philadelphia Phillies in the 17th round of the 1985 Major League Baseball Amateur Draft from California State University. His name...
I'm just saying it like it sounds.
His name is...
Steve Schartz.
That is correct.
I kind of figured.
Wait, hold on. I gotta find out the exclamation that this website gave. Hopefully, this is the right one. Hold on. I'm finding it. Oh, here it is. Fun fact. In English, Steve Shorts actually means Steve has liquidy farts.
Oh, dear. Scott and I sat here for 20 minutes just crying laughing on Zoom.
Is that why you guys were laughing?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
All right. And this is your last one. This one is your last one. All right.
It's not a name.
It is.
There's no way.
Joe, I will read you the bio. This man.
I will read you the bio.
Was an American race car driver. He raced for decades around the short tracks of Wisconsin, winning many championships along the way.
Yeah.
Competed in all these ones and NASCAR. Joe, his name is...
I gotta pronounce this one really quick. Dick... Trickle.
Say it in one sentence, please.
Dick Trickle.
Joe, why would you call
Correct. His name is Dick Trickle.
Joe, why would you call him that? His name is Richard Leroy Trickle. Why would you call him Dick? That's not nice.
Leroy Trickle.
I want 3 points for today.
Why? Why?
Because I got three right.
No. Well, yeah. Okay. Right,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Oh,
fine. That's Joe, worth 3 points.
You'd die at some of these names.
Oh, Joe, you will find out some of these names in the coming weeks, I'm sure.
Oh, dear.
Joe, very good job today, buddy. This is your best time yet. This is your best. This was your best one yet. Very good. Love to see it. All right, boys. Are we ready?
Dick Trickle. Dick Trickle comes around the left. Dick Trickle comes around turn four.
Dick Trickle just crashed.
Oh my God. Trickle takes the win.
Photo finish for Dick Trickle.
Starts with the pitch.
Oh, he's looking back and it's gone. Homer's off Sharts. Oh boy. All right.
Starts with that dirty pitch.
Let's end this madness tonight with Tri-State Sportsbook. God.
Kids with the catch.
Show me the money.
Winners.
All right, Joe, since you made you do that, might as well let you go first. You lost.
Okay.
All right. Very good, Joe.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. I'm going to start out my picks for the week with a little bit of NBA action. I've been betting on NBA finals ever since we started. LA Lakers and Miami Heat, game four. I'm not going with a winner this time around. I'm going the over 218.5 points in the game.
A lot of points.
It's a lot of points considering no Dragic, no Bam.
Yeah.
Well, Bam is playing tonight, and Dragic, if he can handle the pain, he's going to play tonight.
All right.
With a torn plantar fascia. How painful is that, Joseph?
He's fine. That's painful.
Just to get the over, he's fine.
He's absolutely
fine. Come up with some cortisone, he's fine.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler will go off, don't worry.
Huh? I won't doubt that.
Second one, money line.
Was that a short?
Steve? Going money line. Going to the old college football. I'm going to take the Houston and Tulane money line.
That'd be the Houston Cougars. I know you were looking for their nickname there, but I got you, Joe.
I wasn't.
Yes, you were. You said the Houston.
The Houston at Tulane. I was actually going to say Tulane first, and then I ended up saying Houston first.
Okay. All right, whatever. The Houston against.
I'm taking the Tulane. I'm actually taking Tulane money line.
Okay. Tulane.
What are the odds? What are the odds on Tulane?
Tulane. Green. Two lanes of traffic. Tulane.
Tulane green wave.
Tulane green wave. Yeah, I'm taking the money line there, and my final one. I'm going to go to because we don't really do an episode before the good old Thursday night football. What are you laughing at?
Because you didn't tell us the odds. We asked you for the odds, and you didn't tell us.
I didn't even hear you.
Gee, you got your freaking thing on mute. What are the odds on that
money line?
Tulane money line.
What did you say?
I'm about
plus
to skip.
210.
I'm about to skip.
Plus 210.
You.
Plus 210.
Wow.
210.
Wow, Joe. Good.
And then I am taking the Thursday night NFL matchup, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Chicago Bears.
Da Bears.
Point spread, Tampa Bay Buccaneers minus 5.5. Okay. Easy money. $10 nets you a little bit of 114.
Wow, betting all on Tulane, huh? That's the
all on Tulane.
All right, Scoot, you're up.
Okay, my first pick. I'm going for something I've never done before. I'm going to take a player prop.
Oh, very nice.
I am going to the Yankees game tonight, and I'm going to take the over 4.5.
Not allowed
strikeouts.
At the Yankee games,
huh?
They're not letting any fans in. How are you going to the game?
Dumb comment. So what I was saying is I'm going to take a player prop of Davey Garcia over 4.5 strikeouts.
All right.
That's a pretty safe bet.
Okay.
As long as he doesn't get shelled in the first inning. Nah. Or maybe if he does get shelled, Gary drops 2/3 strikes and he gets 5 strikeouts in the first inning. Mm-hmm. My next game, I'm going to go to the NBA Finals as well. But I'm going to take the Lakers -7.
Okay.
Injuries with the Heat, and the Lakers also lost last game. I think they're going to come out hot. LeBron is motivated. My last game, I'm going to the Dodgers and Padres game 1. And I'm going to take the Dodgers -1.5.
Really?
Mike Clevinger hasn't been that great since he got traded to the Padres. He's also dealing with a little bit of an injury, I believe. This is his first start back. He did not pitch in the wild card series. So with Walker Buehler on the mound, I'm going to take the Dodgers -1.5. A $10 bet will win you $72.37.
Not enough.
Joe, what are you drinking there?
Soft money lines.
What are you drinking there?
What are you drinking, Joe?
Apple cider.
Oh, spiked?
No.
That's
pinkies up.
That's unfortunate. All right, I'm going all college football with mine. I'll go Kansas State +9 at TCU. Kansas State still riding high on that upset win over Oklahoma. TCU looks like crap. So I'm going Kansas State +9 on the road at TCU. Mississippi State, I'm going with them +2.5 at Kentucky. Kentucky let me down when I bet college football 2 weeks ago. They are forever hated in my heart. I'm going with the Bulldogs. Ring that cowbell +2.5. And then the old Red River rivalry, I think. Yeah. Texas at Oklahoma. Texas going with them +1.5. Oklahoma didn't look too great last week against Iowa State. Texas didn't look too great either last week, but I'll go with the Longhorns. Hook 'em horns. Love Sam Ellinger. Spencer Rattler, not that great. I'm going with Texas +1.5. Kansas State +9. Mississippi State +2.5. And the good old Longhorns +1.5. $10 bet will win you $69.68.
Kids with the cash.
All right, boys. Very good show. Good stuff, as always. Joe, you did fantastic with the names today. Got to say again, pal.
Thank you.
Very good by you. Steve Schartz would be very proud of you, got to say. Boys, anything else before we go? Go Yankees.
Don't think so.
Go Yankees.
Are we... Can the listeners expect an instant reaction from the Yankees either tonight or tomorrow?
The listeners can. Joe will not be there because baseball, but you and Scott and I will be on for an instant reaction of game 2 of the ALDS Yankees and Rays. So with that being said,
most likely tomorrow, considering the game will probably end at about midnight tonight.
And we're just getting done with this, and it's almost 7 o'clock. So safely said.
Yeah.
So that'll do it
on
for
the
us.
What's Eastern that, Standard Time. Eastern Standard Time, of course.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Joe, you're right. You do have a point. We have listeners all around the world. We do have to specify that. Good. Good job by you. Good job by you, Producer Joe. Always on.
I'm on it.
Your toes.
I'm on it.
Very good.
Producer's got to make all the information.
That's right. That'll do it for us here on the Tri-State Sports Beat. Thank you all for sticking around. Hope you all enjoyed. If you don't already, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at TSSBPod for daily updates on all 9 New York sports teams. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and the Radio.com app, as well as your favorite podcast platform. And now give us a call on the 24/7 Tri-State Sports Beat fan line at 862-260-4315. You can be heard on the podcast in a weekly fashion. Stay tuned. Joe has come back with the edits as strong as ever. So stay tuned for weekly bonus content, including those photo edits, as well as audio and video clips. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next time on the Tri-State Sports Beat.
Namaste, and keep listening to the Tri-State Sports Beat.
Goodbye!
Namaste.
Magazine, salt and pepper and heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall.
Hello, Brooklyn. I love your corners. I'm half your soul. I love your corners. I'm half your soul. I love your corners. I'm half your soul.